one is afraid of pain. No one wants pain to rule over their life. And you don't want the negative side effects of aspirin, ibuprofen, or prescription drugs. They can lower immunity and cause dependency. Is there a safe alternative? I'm herbalist Wendy Wilson, and I prefer willow bark and meadow sweet herbs to control pain, fever, aches, and inflammation. God's herbs are good, and you won't be disappointed. Call Apothecary Herbs for pain or extra strength pain relief formula, toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International, 704-875-8010, or online, thepowerherbs.com. Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663, or thepowerherbs.com. If you have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
1, 2, 3. I was feeling so bad. I asked my family doctor just what I had. I said, doctor, Mr. MD,
doctor,
now can you tell me?
Herb Talk Live. I'm your resident herbalist, Wendy Wilson. Thanks for joining us here on Herb Talk Live. That's where we're going to empower you. That's what we do. Yes, Magical Engineer Frank and I are ready here on American Voice Radio to give it to you, give you empowerment. That's what we're going to do. We got a great show. We're going to be talking about these all 50 states taking some marching orders. They're supposed to be creating these drug monitoring programs, and we're going to get into what that means for everybody. And also, we're going to be talking about the flu season, because it'll be rolling in here, and of course, plagues is on the list, obviously, and we'll see how the hour rolls. We've got a lot of stuff. And don't forget, next Tuesday on the 16th, Dr. Carley will be here, Dr. Rebecca Carley. We'll ask her what's up with the Ebola. Let's see if she has any new things there, and some any new information on vaccines, because I know she always has something on that. Also, before we get to the quack report and all that good stuff, don't forget the Quest for the Cures, that's Ty Bollinger's group. They were in all over the United States looking for cures for things like cancer, and they put together a nice little DVD collection on all these experts in natural solutions to those type of problems. And it's called Quest for the Cures, and you can go to our link area at thepowerherbs.com. Just click on links, and you can click on Ty's little banner there. Find out more about it. He is also on the road again adding to this collection. It's called Quest for the Cures Continues, and that'll be rolling out in October. So we'll be letting you know more about that as that time arrives. But definitely everybody that I've talked to that has seen his DVD collection said it was excellent. So I hope you can tap into that. And, you know, hey, gift season's right around the corner. You know, give the gift that keeps on giving, right? Health. There you go. All right, big salute and Semper Fi to our righteous men and women in uniform. I'm praying for them, praying for you and me, all of America. I'm praying for the Lord God just to, you know, help us out here. We're just covered up, I think, with all kinds of nonsense, and so we're going to need some supernatural help to get rid of that. And of course, I'm seeking his face, hitting the knees. I hope you will too, and mind the time, it grows short. And without further ado, let's do the quack report. Thanks, Frank. What do we have in the quacker? Oh, here's something interesting. Scientists are resetting the stem cells. How do you do that? Well, some British and Japanese scientists have managed to, quote, reset human stem cells to their earlier state, opening up a new realm of research. You know, they can tap into the human development at the potentially earliest stage of a cell growth. It's interesting. They rebooted a stem cell, which was, they said, the equivalent of at the 7 to 10 day stage of an embryo before it implants in the womb. Okay. The study is of resetting these cells. They hope to someday learn more about embryo development so they can, you know, right the wrongs, get rid of miscarriages and developmental disorders. So these stem cells, which have the potential to become any cell in the body, any tissue, can already be made in a lab, either from stem cells extracted from early stage embryos or from adult cells that have been induced or reprogrammed to an earlier state. So these cells are virtually a blank slate, according to science, and anything can be written on them by switching genes on or genes off. So they can, if they make a mistake, they could just, you know, reboot it. Apparently, they introduced these two genes, NanoG and KLF2, which they say reboots the cell, bringing it back to its original blank state. Interesting. I don't know, too much power, you know what I'm saying? Could be a bad thing. Moving along in the quack report, here's a new study. This is from John Rappaport. Interesting, he said there was a study published in the American Medical Journal, American Medical Association Journal, in 98. It was called the Incidence of Adverse Drug Reactions in Hospitalized Patients. Back then it was mind-blowing. What they did is they took, recently though, from that report, they took 39 previous studies on patients in hospitals, and these were people that received drugs while in the hospital or were admitted to the hospitals because they were suffering from a reaction from the drugs the doctors told them to take. And apparently every year in the United States, 76,000 to 137,000 hospitalized patients die from drugs, taking them as directed. So beyond that, every year, 2.2 million hospitalized patients experience serious adverse reactions from their meds. Now, the authors of the study said that their study on adverse drug reactions excluded medication errors. It had basically the objective to show what the numbers were on adverse drug reactions when the drugs were properly prescribed and administered. So that's the number they came up with. So the study had really nothing to do with doctor errors, nurses' errors, or improper combining of herbs, you know, mixing herbs. So it all had to be, it came down to the number of people that were killed who were admitted to the hospitals and died from the drugs they were given. So it wasn't about mixing pharmaceuticals. It wasn't drinking and taking pharmaceuticals. It wasn't any of that. It was like, you know, just the drug. They were taking it. Now, a study by Dr. Rath Health at the Rath Health Foundation is a study they call Commentary on the Safety of Vitamins. And they said in 2010, not one single person in the United States died as a result of taking vitamins. Well, yeah, I don't think I've seen any death certificates by vitamin. I mean, you know. Now, the FDA is really quick to, well, they call them the quack buster. They are quick to jump on vitamins and demonize unproven remedies and say there's really no scientific proof to support any of those, you know, old wives' tales. Meanwhile, the very drugs they're promoting and saying that are certified as safe and effective are killing millions of people at a staggering rate. So the U.S. military, guess this, their casualties of war, the grand total of the military deaths in the history of this country, Revolutionary War, starting with that one, was 1,312 people. 1,312,602 people. Well, in a given 10-year period, modern medicine with its drug treatment kills, get this, 2,250,000 people. Yeah, consider how much effort goes into suppressing that and keeping that a secret, keeping that under wraps. Think about it. Oh, yeah, MDs. MI6, license to kill, apparently. I know. I have to, I don't know. Moving along. Last but not least, we're going to talk about the Ebola thing. Apparently, Liberia doctors walking off the job and some hospital workers as well as this virus spreads because the conditions there are deteriorating in West Africa and the country of Liberia, one of the hardest hit areas with the Ebola outbreak right now. Now, reports are indicating that healthcare workers at the John F. Kennedy Medical Center in Monrovia, Liberia's capital, which is probably the best place, the best hospital, I should say, to be treated at. Well, staff and doctors are walking off because guess what? There's no food. There's food shortages, and it's so expensive to get food. Their families are hungry, and they haven't been paid in like 2 or 3 months. The hospital workers haven't been paid. So, and they're risking themselves to help these patients, and they could get sick and die, and many of them have. So they're just walking off the job. So this current Ebola outbreak, they say, is very different from previous ones. Officials in the United States and elsewhere have called for reinforcements, try to get this thing under control in West Africa. But the situation really has gotten so severe that the CDC director Tom Friedman told the media that the window is closing to halt this global pandemic. So they are going on to and it's spreading wildly throughout the entire country, multiplying countries, cities. You know, this is something that doesn't really hit, populated areas that much. They've already brought about 70 people from the United States in to help out. But the, you know, food shortage and now the employee shortage is probably going to take its toll. And so right now, if you were there in Liberia and you had Ebola virus, the hospitals are just a place where you go. They give you drugs so you quit vomiting so you can not dehydrate yourself. And they hope for the best that your immune system can take care of it. And that's it. That's about as much palliative care you're going to get. Now, according to the World Health Organization, about 80 health workers have been killed by Ebola since the start of the outbreak in December, and nearly 2,300 probable suspected confirmed deaths, they think, since September 5th. So from the December to September 5th date, 2,300 people. So meanwhile, there's a study suggests that Ebola will eventually, get this, this is important, will eventually strike the United States. They're counting on this. Okay, read between the lines. The countries in the coming months that are going to have Ebola, they say, are Guyana, the UK, Gambia, the Ivory Coast, Belgium, and, of course, the United States. highest risk of importing at least one case of Ebola by September 22nd is Belgium. The United States, 18% chance of importing Ebola by September 7th, they said. So that was, you know, last week, weekend. So, well, yeah, they're flying the doctors over here sick. So get your pandemic kit, people. And that wraps the Quack Report.
That's all, folks.
Thanks, Frank. Okay, we're going to be talking about what's going on with this drug monitoring program, okay? It sounds good. Oh, yeah. It sounds like it's really going to help us out. Well, let's look. Patients on prescription medications will be experiencing more monitoring for their drug treatment in the near future. All 50 states are trying to enact legislation to help monitor prescription drugs. So most of the legislation is proposed to protect people from, you know, the drug abuse and the addiction, especially those pain medicines and opiates. However, the wording of these new laws can also apply to any prescribed medicine. Now, some states have passed these laws and some have not made them active yet. Now, the pharmaceutical industry is moving forward with the technology to chip certain medicines, and most likely this will be linked to the state laws for monitoring. Now, this process is called the Prescription Monitoring Program, or PMP. And it will compile data on population groups. It'll track 55 million on Medicaid, probably to help reduce fraud, track health insurance compliance, disease control, of course, including mental health, and, of course, you know, the costs. So what will all this mean for millions of Americans? Well, let's find out. Well, who's heading all this up? Well, make no mistake, the drug monitoring program is coming from the U.S. Department of Justice Drug Enforcement Administration. So the monitoring program is, according to the DOJ, Department of Justice, it's a statewide electronic database to collect data on substances, you know, your drugs, that are dispensed in each state. So the state law enforcement will collect and send data to the, quote, housing agency. So this is a special state regulatory body that's authorized under the state law. Now, it would appear that the federal government is informing state legislators what laws they need to pass in order to make this national database happen. So the DOJ admits that the Drug Enforcement Administration, the DEA, is not overseeing this drug monitoring program, and that this program is, quote, it'll serve several purposes, end of quote. So, again, this is, you know, being implemented under, I think, the guise of education and prevention of drug abuse and addictions, yet drug enforcement has no hand-on activity on monitoring the program. All right, let's see if the states are falling in line. By the fall of 2011, 37 states have enacted prescription monitoring legislation and is currently active. The rest of the states have introduced laws but are not yet operational. So this enables the, quote, special state agencies to collect, dispense all controlled substances and to collect mountains of information on patients using these medicines. Now, according to the Controlled Substance Act, there are five categories of controlled substances. And according to the Department of Justice, a substance does not have to be listed as a controlled substance to be treated as a Schedule I substance. So if any drug affects you physiologically or offers some physical a dependence of some kind, and maybe it has a risk of death, this is considered, quote, the most dangerous class of drugs, class one. So guess what? Just about a majority of medicines fall into that category, right? You know, your statin drugs, your heart drugs, a lot of this stuff. So guess what? Who's going to be monitored? It's not the drug addict. Not really. All right, let's get back to this. So most prescribed drugs could be listed into this category of classification one. And most drugs are that you see that people are taking are what you call lifelong medicines, like your blood pressure, your diabetic, your mental illness drugs, you know, these ongoing drugs that you have to take. And these also, they also create a chemical physical dependency, and therefore they're technically in this category. So, however, if you're taking a medication recommended and prescribed by your physician, such as an anticoagulant, you know, most likely you won't have law enforcement knocking down your door, but you will eventually be put into the database, and your use of these drugs will be monitored. Now, each state controls the access of this data collected, and every state will have this because the federal government pays them in the hundreds of thousands of dollars to participate. It's called the Harold Rogers Prescription Drug Monitoring Program, or HRPDMP for short, and it's tied to the National All Schedules Prescription Electronic Reporting Act, or NASPER for short, and that act was enacted in 2005, and what it does is it grants money in the millions of dollars. States. So if your state participates in both these programs, that's more money that the state's going to receive from the feds. Well, let's talk about the program difference. So what is the difference between the Harold Rogers Prescription Drug Monitoring Program and the National All Schedules Prescription Electronic Recording Act? Well, the Harold Rogers Prescription Drug Monitoring Program helps state law enforcement agencies and public health officials to collect and then analyze the prescription drug data through the state central database. The National All Schedules Prescription Electronic Reporting Act actually just distributes the federal money via the Department of Health and Human Services to the states. So this is all to streamline the exchange of interstate information. Obviously, if the state wants federal money for this data collection, they agree to the terms and conditions of these federal programs. All right, let's talk about which states are monitoring their people right now. Well, Alabama, Arizona, California, Colorado, Connecticut, Florida, Hawaii, Idaho, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Maine, Massachusetts, Michigan, Minnesota, Mississippi, Nevada, New Mexico, New York, North Carolina, North Dakota, Ohio, Oklahoma, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, Vermont, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming. Now, the states that are not yet monitoring are, there's 11 states, Alaska, Arkansas, Delaware, Georgia, Maryland, Montana, Nebraska, New Jersey, South Dakota, Washington, and Wisconsin, and one U.S. territory, Guam. They've enacted legislation to establish the program, but they haven't fully operated. It's not fully operational yet. So what about this data collection? Well, if you live in Oregon, And they have passed the monitoring program. They did that back in 2013. And the data they collect on patients is going to include their sex, days supplied on their drugs, refilled data of the drugs, prescribers of the drugs, and, of course, the pharmacists who filled your prescriptions. All public health authorities in the state have access to this information, including medical examiners. So what's your worst fear about this? Well, some states like Missouri did not want to monitor patient drug records due to other states had their databases hacked. As of July 25th, 2014, Missouri was the only state not to have prescription drug monitoring program in place because they said it was, quote, a big problem. Well, they noted that there was a breach of security that has resulted in five states having problems like Florida, Virginia, Colorado, Utah, and Washington. And Senator Rob Schaff, he stated he was citing an instance where law enforcement officer in Utah used the database to seek out pain drugs from patients and then intimidated those patients to turn those drugs over to him. I guess he sold them, I don't know. So he went on to say that these types of monitoring programs did not show that they actually reduced dependency and deaths from opiate and pain drugs and other medicines. And since the programs were enacted, he said the use of heroin actually increased. So Senator Schaft isn't the only one that thinks that these drug monitoring programs threaten our liberty. Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about Virginia's database that was hacked for a second. Privacy rights have been argued when collected data is made available to those who should not have it. Now, the Associated Press reported that on April 30th, 2009, the Virginia Drug Monitoring Database had a huge security breach, and hackers stole a reported 8.2 million in patient records and 36 million prescriptions. So the hackers held the private information of millions of citizens for a $10 million ransom demand. So when the hackers received payment, they said that they would send the healthcare and law enforcement authorities the password so they can once again have access to the data. Well, the hackers said that if the ransom went unpaid in 7 days, that they would put the information up on the global auction and sell it to the highest bidder. Well, Virginia authorities refused to pay the ransom, and the deadline expired. The investigation is still ongoing. No one has been caught in connection with the virtual theft. Of course, the state of Virginia did send out notification letters to all citizens who had any prescription records and Social Security numbers in the database. And the report said that the database was intact. Nothing was lost, so it's unclear if the hacker actually copied any of these records or even had access to them to begin with and just simply changed the password. Well, I think by now folks know that there's no such thing as a secure database. So what does all this mean? Well, technology and the internet may have eliminated the physical requirement for communicating, but not the costs of communicating. So we have gained speed in which information is transmitted and received, but at what cost? Technology is dehumanizing mankind by exposing all the intimate details about a person without investing a human second of contact. Now, Mark Twain once said, unlimited power is the ideal thing when it's in safe hands. However, the only hands unlimited power is safe in is God's, right? Yeah. And a little power in the hands of a small mind is a really dangerous thing. It is. So I think that the data harvesting program, such as the prescription monitoring program, is basically a two-edged sword. It may offer limited good, but I think it will deliver power into unsafe hands and inflict injury on innocent people. So I can see this program being used as another outlet for identity theft and also to manipulate patients by cutting them off from their medications. So you may ask, well, who would be able to do such a thing and get away with it? Well, the very entity which demanded it be installed, the government. So what better way to make people bow down than to restrict their lifeline of medicine? Right? All right, let's look at the lifeline. Or is this a noose? Really, let's check it out. There are millions of people on what are called lifelong drugs. These are prescribed medicines which cause a physical change in the body. And these drugs manage blood pressure or blood sugar and other functions that the body has to have to survive. And patients become metabolically dependent on these medicines and without them will most likely die. So lifelong drugs do not fix the health problem or strengthen the body, but act like a crutch. I would personally not like to be in a position where my life was held hostage by the availability of a drug or by a law that says you can't have it anymore. So anything could happen, you know, to shut off the distribution line of this type of medicine, a hurricane or some other natural disaster, war, or even economic collapse. So I would try to find a way to fix the problem and not be dependent on the drugs. Now, obviously, if your body depends on a drug every day, then there is a weakness. And one way to fix this health issue is to find the cause and strengthen the body. Nearly 100% of the time, it's the lifestyle that has created a weakness. And I see we got to take a break already. I'll be right back.
And when the morning came, there arose across this nation people thinking one and the same. And they awoke to find their freedoms and all their liberties had gradually been taken away. And when they realized the danger to their posterity, I heard those patriotic people say, we want this country back. and our freedoms and our rights restored. We want this country back. She's been driven way off track. We're wide awake and we're madder than hell now, and we ain't gonna take it anymore. No, we're not gonna take it anymore.
Pumping life into the original medicine. Herbalist Wendy Wilson will be right back.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
007, your assignment is to find out what herb secrets herbalist Wendy Wilson has on Herb Talk Live.
Job stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Is your PSA count high? Half of all men over 50 have an enlarged prostate. You can shrink your prostate without harmful drugs or risky surgery. The secret to healing the prostate is to cleanse the prostate and the liver. Call Apothecary Herbs to ask about the Prostate Kit for a comprehensive way to heal and soothe your prostate. Educate yourself on how easy it can be to disinfect, cleanse, and restore your prostate gland. Call Apothecary Herbs for the Prostate Kit and successfully reduce swelling, inflammation, dissolve stones, and cleanse the blood to obtain the results you need. Money-back guarantee with every purchase. Call the experts in organ cleansing. Call Apothecary Herbs now for the Prostate Kit and empower yourself. Toll free, 866-229-3663, for international callers, 704-875-8010. That's toll free, 866-229-3663, or visit the web at thepowerherbs.com.
Yeah.
Live. I'm your herbalist, Wendy Wilson. We're talking about this drug monitoring program right before the break. And, you know, about 100% of the time when we have a weakness in the body that people run and rely on drugs for, usually that weakness starts with the lifestyle. So nearly 100% of this weakness is because our lifestyles aren't real healthy, and it creates this situation and we get sick, and we have to address that. Now, you want to also strengthen the part of the body that's also not so strong. So there's a lot of natural alternatives out there, alternatives to your drug therapy that will help. Herbs can actually stand in the gap and help the body become strong as you, you know, really change up that lifestyle to become more of a healthier one. And eventually, you won't need the herbs. You get strong. You're not dependent on them. And so always do your homework on your prescription meds and even your herbal products. Now, long before there were pharmaceutical companies, before they arrived, you know, everybody had in their family members turn to Dr. Mom, basically. Women learned about herbal medicines and passed that knowledge down through the family. So herbs have always been a part of man's medicine. And herbs are here for the service of man, according to the good book, Psalms 104. And herbs are not weak. They are actually very powerful. And it would be, you know, it would be the good thing to have this knowledge. It'd be worth having, especially with uncertain times laying ahead. So there are herbs for weak hearts and pancreases and veins and eyes and livers and a whole lot more. So we have bodies that are meant to regenerate, and herbs can help assist in that regeneration process. So if you'd like to learn more about how to do that, you might want to pick up a copy of the Power Herbs ebook. It's just $14.99, and you can get that at thepowerherbs.com. at their website, or you can call the folks at Apothecary Herbs at 866-229-3663. If you're on their website, you're also going to find that there are lots of powerful herbal tinctures to strengthen the cardiovascular system, help balance blood sugar, hormones, remove gallbladder and kidney stones, and a whole bunch more. You have that power. Did you know that? Well, if you did, good. If you didn't, well, here we are. Call Apothecary Herbs and ask for a free product catalog. Ask about their herb kits and ask about their powerful and strong professional strength herbal liquids and powdered mixes. You can do so much. Call toll free at 866-229-3663, 866-229-3663. Now, if you're outside the U.S., dial 704-885-0277. That's 704-885-0277. Again, the website, thepowerherbs.com. You can get there by going and typing herbtalklive.com. They'll get you there, too. And you know what? That's where your healthcare options just became endless. And it puts the power back in your hands. And basically, our health is our responsibility, not somebody else's. Not the World Health Organization, not the UN, not your AMA. It's you and me. We got to do it. All right, we're going to talk about the flu season because it's going to be quickly approaching. And every flu season we get, you know, the stuff from the FDA and the CDC, and they advise everyone, you know, get your flu shot. And they do try to vaccinate and get the public vaccinated. They have this little projection, 70 to 90% evacuation saturation point. So a bunch of propaganda people here about the flu. And the CDC says everyone over 6 years of age should be vaccinated. And so they really do saturate us. School system, TV, news, you're going to hear about this flu season probably being the worst. They want to give out over 135 million doses of vaccine, and U.S. population, you know, they want to at least get more than last year. I think last year they started out in September with 43% of the U.S. population getting the flu shot. So there's other ways to protect yourselves from flu bugs, and we're going to talk about that. Now, medicine tells us that the average adult will, in about 2 weeks, develop antibodies after they get their flu shot. That's what we're told. Incubation for the flu is 1 to 4 days. If you get flu symptoms, you start, you know, you're contagious in about 10 days. So basically, You're contagious once you get the flu shot. You'll start shedding off the virus and you'll infect other people. So if you have a healthy immune system and you do happen to catch the flu, it'll run its course, and they say in an average about 5 to 7 days. If your immune system's not very strong and you've been working on building up a natural immunity to bacteria and viruses, the flu pathogen actually will be gone much faster if you have this lifelong immunity thing going in 2 to 3 days. Now, if you get a flu shot and you run the risk of actually getting the flu, it'll last about 10 days with a persistent cough and lots of fatigue, and that's usually what people report. Basically, you know, flu, I have a secret how to get over the flu in 1 to 2 days. I'm going to get into that in a minute, but and then once you do that, you know, each and every flu season, you run into fewer and fewer pathogens that make you sick. Well, let's talk about the drugs, though. The FDA-approved drugs for treating your flu are Tamiflu and Relenza. They have lots of side effects. The manufacturers of these nasal spray flu vaccines are called LAIV, Laviv, and they state that it has lots of side effects. Essentially, flu symptoms are the side effects: runny nose, coughing, headache, sore throat, aches and pains, and fever. However, the next sentence boldly will tell you on the packaging that it is not the flu that you're experiencing. It is a weakened live flu virus, and the symptoms are not as severe as the real flu, but you're still miserable. Really? So where was the benefit? It didn't help your immune system out any. So they go on to state that the high-risk individuals, which means those that will experience severe complications from a live virus, well, they should get an alternate inactive flu vaccine. And Dr. Joseph Mercola says this: the flu vaccines do not prevent the flu nor protect against the flu. That's true. Flu vaccines are not tested except on the general public. That's you. Now, in 2003, the CDC got an expensive lesson in vaccinating children with flu under the age of 6. The death rate skyrocketed. So according to Dr. Mercola, the statistics on death by flu is distorted by the CDC, and more people die of malnutrition and asthma. So in 2004, death by flu was 1,100, and in 2005, it was 1,800. So the CDC likes to mix in the death by pneumonia and emphysema and COPD in with the flu stats to enhance their statistics. So here's an insert from the Flavivalent flu vaccine. It says, Flavivalent is an influenza virus vaccine indicated for active immunization of adults 18 years of age and older against influenza disease caused by influenza virus subtypes A and subtype B contained in the vaccine. This indication is based on immune response elicited by Flavivalent. So the very company says this is the research they've conducted. And then they go on to say that there have been no controlled trials demonstrating a decrease in influenza disease after vaccination with Flavivalent. So they're basically telling you, we have no proof that this medicine that we make will actually prevent you from getting the flu or protect you from the flu. So what good is it? Well, let's look at some of the contents of the flu. The average flu vaccine is going to contain mercury, over 250 times the safety limit established by the Environmental Protection Agency. These poor little kids get that right into the bloodstream. You talk about brain damage. Flu strains are cultivated and made inactive by formaldehyde, which is a cancer agent, and it's preserved in your thermosol mercury. Pediatricians and other physicians may try to convince patients that the mercury has been removed. However, thermosol is 49% mercury by weight. So here is a list of ingredients added to your pathogens in your average flu vaccine. You're going to have aluminum, which is a neurotoxin that's linked to Alzheimer's. There's a Tritoxin X100, which is detergent. And pentol, which is a carbolytic acid. And then you have ethylene glycol, which is basically your antifreeze. And then they have beta-propylactolone, which is a disinfectant, which is proof that the vaccine's contaminated with lots of bacteria. It's not a clean vaccine, like they tell you. Then they have noxinol in there, which is basically used for sexually transmitted diseases. So why that's in there, we don't know. Then there's Oxybenol 9, which is a vaginal spermicide. Mm-hmm. And sodium phosphate. You know, do you suspect that the flu vaccine is also a sterilization drug? Think about it. All right, let's look at some of the side effects. The side effects are going to be varied and will attack an individual in their weakest area, such as life-threatening allergies, Guillain-Barré syndrome, paralytic disease that can be fatal, encephalitis, which is brain inflammation, neurological disorders like MS, autism, etc., and, of course, thrombocytopenia, which is a blood disorder. So it's interesting that 70% of doctors and nurses and 62% of overall healthcare employees do not volunteer to be vaccinated with the flu vaccine each year, if they can help it. More and more professional healthcare workers are leaving the field rather than to be forcibly vaccinated, or they are calling people like me to figure out how they can reverse it if they have to get it. So why your doctor says no? Doctors and nurses, when you ask them why they don't want the flu vaccine that they're giving to everybody else, these are their reasons. One, they're skeptical. They're skeptical that the vaccine actually works, has any benefit. Two, they believe their immune system is strong enough to fight the flu. And three, they don't want to take the risk of developing the side effects. Right. Okay. Well, let's look at the research. Scientific research on the success of vaccines to prevent or even reduce flu symptoms have been documented in the halls of medicine, and some studies have been quite candid to say that flu shots are completely, well, a failure. They're a complete failure. So, like, for instance, The Lancet and the New England Journal of Medicine published findings in 2008 stating that the flu vaccines did not reduce the risk of pneumonia in elderly. And in the American Journal of Respiratory and Critical Care Medicine, published in 2007, a study where there was no decrease in flu or pneumonia-related deaths in the elderly when they were vaccinated. And then the Disease and National Institutes of Health published a mortality rates on flu vaccine benefits, and they were greatly exaggerated, it said. And let's see, one of the largest reviews, 51 studies showed no evidence that flu vaccines were any more effective than a placebo, and that was published in the Cochrane Database of Systemic Review of 2006. And because more and more reports are appearing to cite vaccine failure, the manufacturers are answering this to make the vaccines more potency. Yeah. This is just more hype and advertising, basically. They do this by making the immune adjuvants in the vaccine more powerful or adding more of them. The problem with this approach is that the very young and the nutritionally deficient and the aged population, this overstimulates an immune system, and it tends to have the opposite effect. And it can paralyze the immune system, and then people can, you know, die from the common cold. See, and that research came from Dr. Russell Blaylock of the Advanced Nutritional Concepts. So, you know, the medical doctors, the epidemiologists, here's one, Wolfgang Wadarg, of the head of health of the Council of Europe. He says that the swine flu epidemic was, quote, a false pandemic to sell vaccines and one of the greatest medical scandals of the century. Well, always follow the money, right? 2009, pregnant women were pressured to get the H1N1 bird flu vaccine, and the loss of the fetuses in that time, first and second trimester, were very significant. If this data is accurate, 590 babies for every 1 million pregnant women vaccinated lost their lives. And it works out to 13.2% fetal loss due to fetal flu toxicity. Now, many women claim that they went into a miscarriage within just the first few hours after being vaccinated with the flu shot. In 2009, the flu shot caused more spontaneous abortions than the vaccine adverse event reporting system recorded. So the Journal of Human and Experimental Toxicity published a study in 2012 on the increased fetal death by the 2009 H1N1 flu vaccine. The spike in miscarriages was significant, and there was little mention of this in the media. They reported that for every 1 million pregnant women vaccinated with the regular flu vaccine, 6.8 lost their babies. So the pregnant women who got the flu, the bird flu and swine flu vaccine, the fetal death actually rose to 77.8%. So there was a combo vaccine there. So it appears that the adverse events reporting system for spontaneous abortions due to the bird swine flu vaccine, you know, didn't get in the database for some reason. What do you suppose that is? Well, if you think that there is no risk with the flu vaccine, any flu vaccine, you want to really do your homework. The H1N1 is now going to be a standard strain in all seasonal flu vaccines, so bird flu and everything. However, if pregnant women don't do their due diligence and dig for the facts on vaccines, they could believe the latest lie from the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecologists, and their new guidelines for flu during pregnancy is, yeah, vaccinate them. Now, they essentially are urging pregnant women to get the flu shot even in their earliest trimesters. So the same old lie of benefits outweigh the risk is touted, as they are pretty much misinforming women about the flu vaccine, and it's causing fetal death and misconceptions. So they convince women by saying that the bird flu and other flu strains have been tested on pregnant and non-pregnant volunteers. They conveniently leave out that the test is when the vaccine was rolled out to the general public. They further convince women that certain drugs and vaccines are safe during pregnancy. And they have set up this vaccine and medications and pregnancy surveillance system, but the system is to also track reaction that the pregnant women and unborn babies have when they're treated with drugs, regular flu vaccines, H1N1 vaccines, antiviral medicines, and asthma drugs. So the rationale says that the time to have tested this is before it is approved for the market, right? But the public basically now is the test case. So if you dig for the truth, you're going to find that there are no benefits to the flu shots as confirmed by independent scientific studies, not linked to the pharmaceutical industry that makes the virus drugs, the viral drugs. Well, you want to establish some protection. So there's more reports on vaccine failure that have been surfacing, and intelligent people are questioning and even avoiding a lot of the vaccines. Drug companies have noticed this, and so they've sponsored promotional discount plans, you know, free pharmacy gift cards, 20% off your prescription, just roll up your sleeve and let us vaccinate you. So why would an industry that makes money on disease want to pay you to supposedly protect you from flu? Think about it. You know, is it really for your protection? Flu vaccines give you the flu, and you are contagious, and you spread the flu to others. So flu shots jumpstart the spread of influenza each and every fall. Therefore, the flu vaccine is not successful at preventing flu and infections, but they are successful in promoting them. So if you want protection, all you have to do, eat healthy, drink clean water, exercise, use your immune system support herbs. You have a better shot at lifelong immunity doing that. So for prevention, if you want to use some immune boosting, enhancing herbs, you know, get you through the really sick days of the flu. A lot of people like to use a little astragalus root to heighten their immune system a little bit. We have that at thepowerherbs.com. We also have a nice little broad spectrum tonic called All-in-One. Take a weekly maintenance dose of that. And a lot of people say they're avoiding a lot of the sickness that their coworkers get every year. So you've got some protection there. Now, if you have problems with, pneumonia and things, but there's a pneumonia kit and there's a lung congestion flu kit. There's all kinds of things that you could do to protect yourself this year without having to subject yourself to all the bad ingredients in the flu shots. So check that out at thepowerherbs.com. Get you a pandemic kit, definitely, you know, protect you from all kinds of plagues. And that's thepowerherbs.com. And the toll-free number is 866-229-3663, thepowerherbs.com. All right. Well, we have a little bit of time here. So we're going to talk about bed bugs, bugs in general. Yep. You know, in August of 08, I said, you know what? The bed bugs are going to get bad. You know, and they are. I mean, if you're traveling in Europe, taking the bus, the train, the ferry boat, look out. There's bed bugs. There's also fleas, ticks, and lice. So if you're traveling abroad, even if it's first-class accommodations, they've got problems. And now it's happening here in the United States. There are swarms of bugs, broad sense of the word, upsetting society left and right. And so right now there is this surge in bed bugs and lice. And, of course, with the immigrants coming in, look out, we got more of that. So when difficult times hit, you know, food tends to get more expensive and more scarce. People become malnourished and become hosts to all these bugs. So lately, water's become more expensive as cities across America, through drought, they're having problems. You know, and water's the main reason to stay clean. So then there's, if there's a tent city, then, of course, you know, drinking water, personal hygiene, that's all sacrificed. So we got problems. And it's not probably going to get better before it gets worse. So we got to be on the lookout, and we got to do what we can about these parasitical infections that tend to carry disease, spread disease, and erode a lot of health conditions. So we're going to get on this right away. Okay. So there's 400 newspapers across America that have been reporting of towns and cities with bed bugs. So we're talking homeless shelters too are affected. Main Street USA is affected. Neighborhood homes, apartment buildings, hotels, college dorms all seem to be popping up with bed bugs. Now, just, you know, 5 to 8 years ago, the Department of Health had few, if any, reports of bed bugs in America. Now there's a 70 to 80% increase in reports. However, it isn't to the point that you know, look into the sky and see a swarm of descending bed bugs on your town. Not yet, anyway. So the University of Kentucky, they did a survey. They did a pest management professional survey on bed bug infestation. The large percentage of those surveyed, 91%, reported that their organizations encountered a lot of bed bugs and within the last 2 years, whereas before that, it was only a 37% encounter. So their investigation showed that pest control companies in small towns who rarely received any calls to treat for bed bugs now were fielding dozens of calls. And some of these professionals in large cities received about 150 calls a week. The Institute of Biology in London, they published a study on bed bugs. And since 1996, London has had a tenfold increase in bed bugs. Australia has also had a bed bug problem. National Geographic News reported 700% increase between 2000 and 2004 in the pest control treatment problem of bed bugs in Australia. So during that same time frame, America has had a 500% increase. So the last state in the U.S. to report exponentially increasing of bed bugs, well, there wasn't one. All 50 states are having problems. So what did our grandparents do for bed bugs? Well, post-World War II, the use of DDT was outlawed to kill bed bugs. So what did our grandparents do to control these critters? Well, they didn't tell you to sleep tight and don't let the bed bugs bite and do nothing at all. No, they had some common sense. What they did is they got rid of the wood frame beds and went to metal frame beds because they harbored fewer bed bugs. There was less nooks and crannies for them to crawl and hide in. They also put up arsenic-laced wallpaper to kill the bed bugs. Twice annually, the beds were dismantled and fumigated, scrubbed down, mattress was cleaned, and that cut down on the bed bugs. So bed bugs, about the size of a grain of rice, they're round and flat, brownish-reddish color. They can easily hide between mattresses, cracks, crevices. So you want to be smart out there? Hey, next week, I'll have some secrets on some natural things for bed bugs, okay? I'm out of time. The information presented is not intended to diagnose, treat, prevent, or cure disease, so seek medical advice before, well, a licensed medical physician if you dare, before you use any product or therapy. I'm your herbalist, Wendy Wilson. Till next time, be well. Get your